Coming from the Lower Haight in San Francisco, it's the Are You Serious Show.
Are you serious?
I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show. All right, we're back again. Sorry to be doing this every other week lately, but now Diana's back out of rehab. So,
I've been out of rehab for so long, it's hardly like
I'm blaming you in rehab for everything that goes on. And anyway, I'm feeling pretty vacant today, so I'm not going to do a much of an opening patter, but I'm just going to welcome our many co-blabbers here. And Jeff Deal, of course, has to be here. Otherwise, the show wouldn't work. And Steve Robles, who you, few of you may remember from our first few shows, is hanging.
Here to make sure the show doesn't work.
Back doing quality checks.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Screw it up. And, of course, Diana Brown. And welcome, Diana.
Thank you, Are You. It's good to be here. And those who can't see Jeff right now, he has new hair. So hopefully we'll get some pictures up.
Just got it
that.
In the mail yesterday.
It's nice. It's very nice.
Welcome. Come right in. You can't afford to miss this. Step right up.
But, you know, Jeff did send us an email that reminded us that we should be focusing on the important issues. And I'm really happy to know that, you know, before most people who had 9/11 conspiracy theories were kind of judged out as being wing nuts. But it has taken the bad boy from Ferris Bueller's Day Off to pull our attention to 9/11 and add some legitimacy to it. So, you know, I mean, Charlie's got some points here.
No, we're not talking about Charlie Manson here, are we?
No, I'm sorry if you thought we were. But if you want to give a shout-out to Charlie Manson, let me give you a moment.
Hey, Chucky, keep listening, man.
Are You is so good to
us. We're praying for you.
Chucky.
We're praying for you, man.
No, we are talking about Charlie the Machine Sheen. And
I mean, Charlie Sheen, one of the
major.
But what I want to know
is, his dad was president.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. You know, most people think his dad was president.
What does Carrot Top think?
I don't know, but I know that Emilio is busy making sure that there's no, you know, atomic energy in Iran, so
it's
he's
true.
Busy
Emilio,
with that issue right now.
Emilio wanted to come out and make a statement and not be the also-ran that he has been so long. But, you know, here's a question that I'm interested in. I think there's going to come a day when they find out if it's true, if CIA infiltration of the media exists. I mean, Google turned a blind eye to this for 3 days until they were outed on a radio show, and then they started reindexing pages pointing to Sheen's comments. So I think, you know...
you think the CIA was in there with
I don't think
Yahoo,
you need to have a CIA operative in Google just to have them be ballless.
But why would anybody try to stop people from hearing about what Charlie Sheen
has to say? I don't know why
say.
This was the deal.
No, I mean, it's not like Charlie legitimized...
Well, I was, you know, digging around, and like PrisonPlanet.com pointed out how they had done a lot of research, and people didn't want to talk about it. Like Associated Press, there were stern rebuttals of, we're not talking to you. And another news source was like, you're not going to bait me. Like, people were really afraid to touch this for some reason.
Actually, I saw a discussion on one of the talk shows, the cable talk shows, where the sort of very sort of normal representative of liberalism was saying, well, you know, why not take a look at it? Why not investigate it?
Charlie Sheen has brought legitimacy
Charlie,
to this.
Man, it's all because
I can see a future where, you know, an expression of truth.
I think, truly, if Carrot Top comes out on this, then...
Then we will have a consortium. We'll have like a full forum.
I'm waiting for Gallagher myself. I consider Gallagher to be the bellwether of, you know, political...
wisdom, and relevant.
So.
But, you know, back to the CIA, for all we know, Are You, you could be CIA, having infiltrated your own show. And
I've infiltrated my own mind, actually.
Ever been accused of being absent-minded or careless at its work. Here, a robot that never...
We're here with Violet Blue. Everybody's just yapping away. Is there anything anybody wants to say here? Yeah, all right. She's the host of the popular podcast, Open Source Text, and author sex. Or editor of...
Open Source Sex.
Open. Did I say text?
Yes, you did, as a matter of
fact. All right.
Text makes you excited.
But we've been talking about Gilligan's Island, and I'm completely, like overwhelmed. Thinking of Thurston Howell. Anyway, she's the author or editor of billions and billions of books, including Sweet Life, Erotic Fantasies for Couples, The Ultimate Guide to Fellatio, and, of course, just to be fair, The Ultimate Guide to Cunnilingus. Mm. And her latest, I think, if I'm right, is Lips Like Sugar. Is that right?
That is the newest
Lips
one.
Never mind. Women's Erotic Fantasies, and she's also been a professional sex educator for... 8 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
8 years.
So, sex. What is there left to say about it? You might have to find, things to say about it on maybe a daily basis. So, what's novel or interesting or what will surprise jaded people like us or
jaded people?
Our listeners?
Oh, I think there's actually a lot to say about sex these
days.
Okay,
good. Let's get started.
Well... I find that a lot of people are really interested in my podcast because I'm talking about sex in a whole different way than most people are talking about it in the media, whereas in the media it's usually in some really fairly stereotypical ways, especially like in the context of radio. You either get like Howard Stern or you get like Sue Johansson, who's trying to like really make it soft and accessible for people. And
right.
I've just sort of been talking about it in Anything Goes, but you know, all genders, all orientations, everyone's sort of warmly welcome. Intelligent approach to sex, and right. And then also, you know, interviewing porn stars and asking all them right. wacky questions and just sort of having fun with it, basically.
Right.
So there's a lot to say.
All right. So what are the cool things that we could do, for instance? give us some advice to our readers. I mean, at this very moment, they're listening to
you're just
a podcast.
For a smooth move for later tonight, yeah. Aren't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. Exactly.
depending, on, I guess, on their gender preferences.
That's true. It depends on what you want to do.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I necessarily have a big list of tips that I can sort of whip out on the spot or sort of any random occasion. Yeah. But I will tell you what's got to be in my bonnet lately, if you want to
sure,
hear about
that. That would work.
Yes.
Okay. Teledildonics has really been bothering me a lot lately, and I've done a couple of lectures and presentations on it. I even did a live demonstration of teledildonics with a machine that's housed at the Museum of Sex in New York. Which
now, by teledildonics, are you talking about the fucking robots, or you're talking about
remote
virtual
stuff,
reality?
Right?
Yeah.
Well, sort of. It's interesting because basically what teledildonics is, as you know from the Rheingold book, it's
sure,
just basically,
back.
Yeah, way yeah. back machine. It's basically just like controlling sex toys over the web, essentially.
Right.
And, you know, when the concepts first started sort of, you know, hitting the web waves, people had all these really wacky ideas of like making, you know, Lawnmower Man real and things like that, you know, full immersion suits. And there were all this, there was sort of like a huge flood of ideas and experiments and inventions that hit the market. And most of them were just utter crap. And some of them were even dangerous. And then right around, I think it was probably right around 1991, someone wrote a patent. Some dude in Texas hired a group of lawyers to write a patent, a teledildonics patent. And what that patent effectively did was it basically put a stranglehold on all development of teledildonics until present. And right now, it's kind of this weird market where only two companies actually have teledildonic products that they can sell, and
they're
you have to sign up for their service, and they're very expensive, and they keep all your personal information, and they sell your private information, and it's a can I say swear words on here?
You can say anything you want. Well, you know, you're
okay.
a podcaster.
Well, I don't know what your audience
standards
is.
And practices, of which we have none.
Excellent.
I think the standard in practice is to try to utter as many curse words during the course of a
certainly encourage it. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's a fucking racket is what it is. And it's really sad because a lot of people are, like I know a whole bunch of other people who are sort of like, they're basically sitting at home, taking apart sex toys, taking apart Xboxes and wiring them and making them work and doing really interesting things. And so I'm like trying to champion a sort of open source movement to try and break this patent.
Well, they can't market it, but they also, I mean, the assumption would be that they can't even use it or they can't share it with people? Is that the
exactly case? Well, the thing about this patent is, like, I have a copy of it and I've looked it over a lot, and it's when you take a look at it, you realize it's a classic case of patent trolling. Like, someone essentially wrote a patent based on the FUFME art project website,
right?
And then just did a bunch of block drawings and had their lawyers write up as much doublespeak as possible to sort of cover everything that could be operated via computer over the web that had to do with sex.
Yeah.
And they're not, it's not based on anything that they plan on selling, and they haven't developed anything around this patent at all. And so it's fairly obvious when you look at it that they're making it so that they can basically sue anyone who tries to make something. And
what are you going
to
do about it, though?
Because
patent trolling is pretty standard practice these days, right? I mean,
yeah, it is.
Tons of people do it.
Yeah, our patent system is so broken.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Brutal. Hijacking all future development.
I know. It's so frustrating.
It is. They're like pirates. Yeah.
When all a girl wants to do is get off on the web.
That's right.
It's like,
really?
Come on.
Share some toys. But you said there were two companies, so is there one that's actually doing something that's functional that people use out there? I haven't really been following this.
Well, they're fairly functional, but they're functional only within the websites.
Right.
And with the software that they have you
and
download,
what does it do? I mean,
and with the toys,
like,
that they sell you,
yeah.
And it's like they have three or four toys, and they're just kind of one trick pony toys,
right.
Where it's either a vibrator or a like a masturbation device for men, like a sleeve.
And what's the
that vibrates?
What's the control? I mean, what?
They're flash interfaces.
So, what can you do on the remote control end? You know, how can you control it
on the operator end?
What goes on or something like that? Sending signals to.
Well, it's actually pretty interesting because, well, the flash interface is, like, embarrassingly adolescent. Like, they wrote it for guys so it looks like the cockpit of a race car. Okay,
oh,
for starters, yeah, but it's almost like a child's race car, you know? It's like,
Fisher-Price.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, and so you can, like, control the throttle and the speed and stuff like that, but all it's doing is operating what is basically usually a rabbit habit vibrator on the other end. It has two functions. It vibrates. There's a clitoral stimulator at the base that vibrates, and then the shaft, which rotates. And it's a scale of 1 to 10. So, like, you know, 1 is a low speed, 10 is like maxing out. So,
yeah. What about some of these people who are hacking around at home? What are some of the things they're doing? Because I know we did the sex machines guy here, and
Timothy here, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, and those are all pretty straightforward and simple and similar,
yeah.
Also, I mean, you know, basically stick a dildo on something and make it pump up.
They're awesome. They're almost like art brute.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that people are trying to hack together? Have you seen any of that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Like QDOT, who is at slashdong.org, which is just the best name for a website ever. He's basically taking apart toys and taking apart Xboxes and making them into sex boxes, so that there's sort of like force feedback going on with the boxes and things like that. And he's experimenting with a lot of different stuff. And he's also taking, it's funny too, other companies are like selling these USB sex toys, and they market them like cyber sex on the web with your USB sex toy, but all they are is powered by USB. They're not controlled via USB. So you spend like, you know, $30 on these things and you get them home and they just are powered by your computer. You can't actually do anything with them. And so he's taking those apart too and looking at the boards and...
Sounds like the old log cabins I used to buy through Boy's Life or something.
Oh, yeah.
I used to have all these things in the back that didn't work. I would try each one. The x-ray specs.
The hovercraft.
The x-ray specs definitely did not.
Sea monkeys.
Yeah, sea monkeys. I was going to say sea monkeys.
Now, there's a question. Has anybody made some genuine x-ray specs yet? I wonder.
I don't know.
That would be interesting.
But I remember there was a Sony camera that came out a while back that had an infrared mode. And these are actually hard to find. They pop up every now and then. They're really expensive. But the infrared mode actually did see through clothing.
Right. Well, they have that at the airport, or they were going to have it at the airport.
Yeah, which is kind of hot in a weird way.
Yeah. I can't wait to go through there and have everybody.
Your secret exhibitionist
side.
Exactly,
get you ready for the
particularly when it comes to. A lot around the subject of robots. You're doing an artificial intelligence sex ed robot. Tell us what's up with that.
Yeah. Well, I've been working on. If you go to Pandora Bots, there are a large number of artificial intelligent robots that are operating on their own, but also you can sort of like, you know, claim one as your own and give it a name and sort of give it some personality. And there are a couple of ways that you can sort of play around with them to give them different personalities. Like you can teach them different conversational habits by simply talking to them and correcting their answers. Or you can actually go into the files and sort of like really root around in the code. And there's like thousands of files. It's massive. And so I had this idea to have this sort of artificial intelligence, you know, bot on my website that people could sort of chat with and get information from, and just to sort of make it a little bit more interesting. And then also, because the way that the software works, it's really interesting. It learns. The more it's talked to, the more it learns. Yeah. And so I started playing around with this. And as I was playing around with it, I realized that the inventor had coded in a really intense set of Christian conservative Republican values into the... Yeah, yeah. It was amazing. I was like, just sort of like messing around, and I made it a female, and I named her Betty, and I'd ask her a question, and she would come back with something like, you know, I'd be like, you know,
I took the virginity pledge.
I only have anal sex. So.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Only with priests. No, but it was really kind of weird, because it's, you're just like, wow, who thinks to give a robot religion? You know, so she was coming back with all of these, you know, talking
Kurzweil,
about Jesus every once in a while, and, you know, saying Reagan was the greatest president and things like that. And wow. I was like, holy shit. So I...
How did you make this connection? This sounds so odd.
I just had a couple glasses of wine and went home by myself and just started chatting to see what comes up. And I was asking her just sort of questions that I figured people on my site would ask. And, of course, they're going to be of a sexual nature. And her responses were really sex negative, pretty homophobic. And then I was like, wait a minute, let me follow this thread. And ended up finding all the Christianity and stuff like that. And I was like, ah, shit. So I took it upon myself to go into the files and go line by line and take out all of the sex negativity, all of the, you know, all of the Christianity, all of it, and put in sort of my own freaky sex positive set of values.
Did you ask
this
person to program it for you, or this is like
a
pre-existing... The pre-existing program with all this stuff.
It's a pre-existing program, right. And it's free. Anyone can go and get a robot basically on Pandora
bots.
You're
reprogramming it for
exactly for my own purposes, and it's been really interesting actually doing it. But I'm not the only person that's run into this problem. Actually, my friend Karen Marcello, who I work with at Survival Research Laboratories, she's a coder, and she did she worked with Stellark, who is a famous Australian performance artist. And he wanted to make a head that people could talk to, its own autonomous head. And so she used the same set of files, and her and Stellark ran into the exact same thing. And Stellark was just like, Karen, take all that shit out of there. Like, you know, I don't want this to be a Christian robot, you know? So it's been really interesting going through this whole process. And now I think I kind of have her at the point of, you know, my friends are beta testing her right now, and so they're getting really stoned and like chatting with her at midnight and like asking her
doesn't say anything
crazy
too lame
things.
Or anything.
She says really weird stuff sometimes though that really surprises me. Like my friend Jackson was like, suck Jesus's dick, and her reply was, I would if I could, that sounds fun. And then another one, he asked her, Have you accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as your Savior? And her answer was, I think I used to accept Jesus Christ as my Savior, but Violet reset my memory. And I was like, she said that on her own?
I love this!
Isn't that impressive? That is very impressive.
I was really shocked. Like, the files are obviously talking, you know, like, there's information being
Violet
put together.
Reset my memory.
I know!
At what point?
She will be dead.
You need a t-shirt that says that.
I know! Right,
at what point is this thing going to turn on you? And
I know! Well, that's the hope, right?
Follow this.
Well, yeah, it'll either turn on you or, you know... It seems if you're saying that it actually knows how to apply, you know, knowledge, then it's just one more thing for me as
become
an insecure male.
I don't want you asking anybody else any questions about sex. Just me.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the sort of like weird sci-fi fantasy in my mind through all of this is that people will start to have relationships with her. You know, because she'll begin to remember people's names and facts about them and stuff
like
that.
Doing it already. Sounds
and then
like,
see what happens after that. And then I also found this really cool video from like 2001 called Alt Sex Fetish Robots from this woman, this female director, Alison Dufresne, who did she did a documentary on people who have robot sex fetish, like sex with female robots, and you know, and she showed some really funny scenes from porn films where it's like the robots go awry and you know, and their panties fall off, and it's like totally silly. But she went to the Real Doll Factory down in Los Angeles and showed them working on real dolls where they're actually embedding actuators into the dolls to make them move. And like they were showing
their
torsos moving.
Real bots.
Totally. So I'm thinking like, my AI, their bodies, we've got the army. We can take over the world.
That's so cool. We don't have to worry about other people anymore.
Why don't we? Let's hope in the internet, I'll never have another reason for human contact.
your plan is frighteningly simple and plausible.
We need to break for a moment and listen to some music, and then we'll be right back with Violet Blue.
Serious.
Living in this
We're back with Violet Blue, who is laughing at something. What were you guys talking about?
Well, I was just commenting on the fact you haven't mentioned your book yet, and as it is very
okay,
serious.
Now you mentioned
game.
Now everybody
your
gets
your book is mentioned.
But I'm not going to mention the name of my book. Actually, okay. We can talk about Violet's. But when did you start writing books about sex? How did you get into it?
How did I get into
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and when?
Kind of like how I get into everything, which is by accident mostly. Yeah. No, actually, I have a very strange and checkered past, but at one point I ended up managing one of the oldest occult bookshops in town, Curios and Candles, which was on Divisadero and Haight for 28 years.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And I was the manager, and I was in charge of ordering the books, and so when I was ordering the books there, I ordered a lot of sex books, which we really shouldn't have had on the shelves, but I was interested.
Well, why not, though?
Exactly.
They weren't all tantric, though. They weren't all tantric. Yeah.
Exactly.
You don't have to save your seed. I mean, if, you know, you're going to do it properly in the occult way. You have to run that kundalini energy.
Exactly.
Back up the whatever.
Whatever.
Back up. Proud of you, are you?
I learned that somewhere. I vaguely remember something.
You read it on
that.
The back of a milk carton or something. Yeah.
Next to Timmy.
No, but then I wrote for a lot of various zines, throughout the whole zine explosion, and. Just sort of kept writing, and then I got a job working at Good Vibrations, which is the local, you know, sort of semi-feminist sex retailer. Yeah. And they found out I could write, and so they basically ended up giving me Susie Bright's old job, which was writing the book and video reviews.
Yeah. Very cool.
And yeah, it was really cool, because basically I was then reading sex books and watching porn for a living and writing about it and having a really good time. And the writing that I was doing, the copy to sell the books, was so good that a couple of publishers started using it regularly on the backs of their books and crediting me for it. And then one of the publishers just sort of said, "We like your writing. Do you have any ideas for books? We know you read books for a living about sex." So, and I said, "Yeah, I've got lots of ideas." And that was sort of how it was born. And I wrote, I wrote the intro to Sweet Life. I put together Sweet Life. And
some of these are collections of.
This is an anthology of erotic fantasies for couples. Yeah. And it sold out of its first printing in 3 months, which was pretty astounding, especially for a small publisher. And I think it's just because I sort of figured out the recipe of what people were looking for in a book like that. You know, just sort of like realism and sex positivity and adventurousness. Because all the other books I'd read, up to that point were really. Like the couples, you know, the erotica for couples, they'd be like, "Let's have a fantasy of a threesome," and then at the end they'd break up, you know. So there was always this moralistic tale to sex, and so I was like, "Well,
the Cinemax version."
Exactly. I was like, "Let's take out all these Hollywood cliches and just show people having sex and having a lot of fun with it." And then I wrote the oral sex books, and they've been such bestsellers, it's sort of embarrassing.
Yeah.
So they're translated into a bunch of different languages now.
How conscious do you think people are of this idea of sex positivity? I mean, there seems like in the sort of center of American society, there's just this enormous ambiguity and sort of unconsciousness about how to deal with whether to have a very repressive sex life or you know, to go to the other extreme, be very promiscuous, whether to experiment or not. And it seems like people don't really have an ideological context for knowing what their decision should be or how they should think about this stuff. You think there are people who have this sex positive attitude? You think it's spread more widely than
it's kind of viral. It's kind of viral, but I think that I agree that with you, by and large, I think the majority of people, at least in the United States, there's a giant division between desire and what they feel is right or wrong.
Right.
And there's a big split between, you know, a really good way to talk about it is to talk about fetish, the way that people deal with fetish.
Right.
You know, so someone might have a fetish for, you know, wearing rubber or shaving their body hair off or something like that. And, you know, frequent chat rooms where other people get off doing that and talking about it. But in their regular sex life with their wife, they don't talk about it, or, you know, like there's this huge division because they feel that what they do is wrong on some level. And so, you know, the sort of sex positive movement is to sort of remove judgment from all of that and say, hey, it's a fantasy, you know, and fantasies are okay. And even if it's a fantasy that upsets you, it doesn't mean you want it to come true, you know, and sort of like, you know, give everyone language to sort of be able to talk about all of the things that are going on. And I think it's interesting because I'm getting a lot. Like, a lot of people have bought my books, and a lot of people subscribe to my podcast, and I get a lot of mail from people who are relieved to sort of, have all this stuff talked about in a normal way,
right.
You know, in a way that's not like, you're listening to this because something's wrong with you. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Or and, you're listening to this because we want ratings, you know.
Exactly.
Sensational kind of way.
Well, that's why we're doing this.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's why.
God knows we would never talk about sex.
No.
Unless it's for ratings.
Only because we need listeners.
We want
exactly.
Well, I don't even have sex unless it's for ratings.
Right. Actually. Well, that's what's so fucking awesome about podcasting is because it's the complete, for me, like my angle is that it's the complete democratization of sex education in this country.
Right.
You know, because most people, when they get any kind of sex education, it's either through their church or their parents, or they get 5 minutes on reproductive health, maybe in school, but probably not. You know, and the rest is all like, you know, your genitals are dirty, you know, women with big tits are, you know, you want, yeah, exactly. It's just like, you know, the measure of a man is the size of his dick, you know, like all the usual all right. bullshit. And I think that
wait
people.
A second, that's
bullshit.
That's not true. Not?
Oh, no.
Woohoo! I'm free! Do you really, do you think that, first of all, do you think that America can ever shed that basically, you know, what is it, Victorian attitude about sex, a puritanical attitude about sex?
Well, I think that people, what at least what I'm learning through my experience with all of the different media that I'm working with, is that people are a lot more sexually sophisticated than most people assume. And that's, I think, a big glaring problem of major media and Hollywood and the people who are trying to make laws against porn on the web and things like that, is that they're forgetting that people are smart and they read and they watch and they listen and they learn, and they are more sexually sophisticated than anyone assumes. And they're trying to become more sexually sophisticated because sex is fun. And no matter how much, you know, the higher-ups are telling everybody that sex is bad and wrong and not good for you and, you know, doing it for pleasure is bad for society, people know it's fun, and, you know, once they get in their relationships, they want to do it for fun. And I do agree on a certain level that it is really nice to have something to rebel against in a lot of ways. And you certainly can't have the naughty schoolgirl fantasy without the evil headmaster.
Yeah, I mean,
you
know?
I think it's definitely, it's there for sure.
I mean, that's the interesting, I think, irony in sex positivism possibly. Mm-hmm. Is that I think sex has to be a little bit naughty.
Oh, it's got
to
be dirty. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't. You know, I'm definitely representing like sort of the sex positive sex educator community at this table, but I've definitely run into my own set of problems dealing with the sex positive community because I'm not PC and
it's
I don't subscribe
hearts and flowers.
Right.
So that's sort of like the 60s sexual revolution. You know, sex was Xavier Hollander, sex is the nicest thing two people can do together or something.
Yeah, right.
It's not, you know, that can be nice, but nice might not be the
But that might
word
not be
being
very hot, you know.
Well, I think one problem is this whole idea of like I mean, when it gets to the point where you can't even deny that getting drunk and fucking is fun.
Exactly.
And may not, I mean, at what point, well, this is a problem with sex positivity is it tends to echo the...
Yeah, please put the beer down when you elaborate on this.
Raise it. Raise it to the ceiling. Raise it.
Right. I can put it closer to this really expensive microphone.
Fucking is fun. Absolute.
But I mean, yeah, that's my problem with
totally.
Where it becomes no different than its Puritan counterpart when you sit there
and go,
my God, you can't, like, get high and have sex. Holy fuck. You
right.
know, that's not what we're talking about. That's bad, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of the problems.
Which side am I on?
Yeah.
Which team am I pitching for?
Totally. At Good Vibrations, like, when I would write for them, like, they would routinely edit out what they perceived were,
not
you know,
PC
un-PC,
yeah.
you know, like, you know, if I use the word exotic, they were like, well, that could be a negative reference toward people of color. And I'm like, oh, come on. You know, like, they were in the tropics. You know, they were fucking up against a bamboo tree. And it was just like, it was an exotic locale. But, you know, that and then also, like, you know, references about, you know, people getting drunk and fucking. You know, in books, it's like, oh, well, you don't want to do that. Or, you know, going
that's
to, like, the... these sex-positive
like
play parties.
It's not like you're getting on the wheel of a car. You can get drunk.
Exactly.
You haven't tried
exactly.
that? Get drunk?
Get drunk
have
sex on the wheel of a car. Yeah,
that's a new movement.
Yeah, and then you crash your Volvo.
Yeah.
You're wrapping around a tree.
I could have been driving a Mercedes.
Oh. That's the beer talking.
Or a slant six.
Mm-hmm. Hot.
So let me ask you about just for the hell of it, there's been a lot of screaming on the screaming head talk television channels about this woman, Deborah Lefebvre. She's a school teacher. She had sex with a 14-year-old boy.
Yes. Yeah.
And all these guys are screaming about this kid, how he's a victim. And,
oh, please.
Whatever.
That's the funniest thing I've seen. And you see like six people, you know, mostly men, but men and women sitting around the table, every one of them taking it deadly seriously. The only person I've ever seen say the opposite of was Bill Maher on his show.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
That's Bill his job. But yeah. It's the oldest story in the world. I mean, look at The Graduate. I mean, it's such an
summer
archetype.
Summer of 42.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. And then also on the other hand, when I was a 14-year-old girl, I was completely seducing older men that should not have been having sex with me. Willingly, for pleasure, for fun. So it's really hard
and
to...
And you were damaged by it terribly, I can tell.
Oh, obviously.
Yeah. You're a wreck.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I can hardly drive a car. Yeah, that's true.
You won't have sex while doing so.
Exactly. I crashed my
Volvo. You need to turn them all in.
But yeah, it's a tough call too, because it's, you know, it's technically a minor, you know, and you don't want to go around advocating sex with minors, but you also want to advocate someone to be able to have enough power to make a rational decision themselves. And so,
well, I mean, isn't the age of consent is sort of, and the word random, it's, you know, people assume it has to be 18, but I mean, that's like the third rail of sexual politics is, you know, you can't really talk about.
I'll say it right now. It should be 16.
Really? I think 14. Yeah.
Crucify
actually.
Me. Oh, really?
Well, yeah, it's 14
in Europe. You take the
bullet on this one. Right.
Not that I personally would. Now, for a second, let's talk about porn positivity. When I interviewed V. Vail on this show,
cool.
You know Vail
from
he's Research
great.
Publications, and he said something that I thought kind of surprised me. He said that somebody had gotten in touch with them to say that they were doing punk porn, and he said that there was no such thing as punk porn, because punk was about participation and porn is about watching and being a voyeur.
Interesting. So, interesting perspective.
Yeah. Do you want to start a fight with Vail, or
you want Vail to knows that? Vail knows where I live. He knows I work at SRL.
Yeah.
No, I think that's interesting. What Vail probably doesn't know about is that the porn system is a really closed system. It's a lot like Hollywood. So it's really, really hard to... You can't say, I'm going to make porn and then make a couple of movies and get them distributed. You just fucking can't, because the distribution networks are tight and they're closed. They're only open to certain companies.
Right.
They only bring in the people that they accept that share their same type of values. And the distributors completely dictate the content of what is in pretty much all porn that you see in the stores. It's the same six or seven sex scenes. It's the same positions. It's the same sex acts. It's
kind
in the same
of, kind
order.
Of old boys network, kind
it
of.
Is completely the old boys network. And I've traveled through their circles many times. And what's happened is that there's been a backlash against this. That is basically, they're calling themselves the alt porn movement. And they're basically, it's like Suicide Girls, which I don't like Suicide Girls. But and Suicide Girls has done...
Tell us why. But,
well, one of the reasons I don't like them...
Make your other point. But
no, it ties into my other point, actually. Yeah. One of the reasons I don't like them is that they do everything they can to distance themselves from the word porn. Hmm. Like, I've worked with people on different articles about porn and pinup sites, and Suicide Girls won't have anything to do with it if the word porn is in it. Ah. Because they're like, we're not porn. You know, we have nothing to do with porn, which I think is a complete... I just think it's kind of fucked up, because they're selling sexy pinup girls doing sexy things, and who's to decide what it isn't.
So they're doing that erotica versus porn distinction?
Yeah, like, but then they're too tough to say that, right? And it's just kind of like, what the fuck? So what happened was people who were, you know, the pinups and the people who are sort of moving through those scenes said, let's make hardcore versions of this and make porn with these actors and with these people that isn't, that, you know, it's not the same five dudes that are in every porn film, you know, and the same, you know, Barbie body chicks that like fake orgasms and, you know, do all the same boring things over and over again. So, and a lot of different companies have sort of sprouted up around that. There are a lot of them online. And they use tattooed chicks with piercings, guys with tattoos and mohawks and stuff like that. And so it's sort of like the punk porn movement, and they're completely...
It's a DIY kind of...
Exactly. And what the reaction of the mainstream porn industry has been really interesting, because they, for a while, completely pretended like they didn't exist at all. And, like, I went to the porn convention, and which sucks. It's just the most insane thing.
The Vegas?
Yeah. I went there, and I was just like, oh, my God, I'm so lonely. Like, I was so alone with all these weird people there. And I was at this convention, and I saw these other punk kids there and ended up meeting with them, and they were a bunch of alt porn kids. And we all just, like, hung out together and drank, and, like, they, you know, everyone ignored us. No one, you know, and even though I was there, like, you know, reporting with a couple of different agencies, it was just kind of weird, like, because we were tattooed and we weren't wearing the stacked heels and had the big blonde hair, but we, and then so now what they've done in the mainstream porn industry is that they've co-opted two people from the alt porn scene, and they're like, we've got alt porn now, and so now that there's this weird
new commercial genre,
exactly, but it's the same six or seven sex scenes, it's the same sex acts, it's the exact same stuff, but just with different performers now.
Wow,
it's weird, and they've, you know, still there's a whole other set of alt porn that's being completely ignored by this giant behemoth of an industry. So it's weird. It's like the same, you know, like Hollywood and independent films.
It's like the Madison Avenue of the porn industry.
Yeah.
Oh, we saw this on the street. It must be hip. So now we're going to sell it to you.
We're going
to
sell our version of it to you.
Right. Our branderized version of it.
Exactly. Without understanding at all what's appealing about it.
Well, it's really it's no different than any other like mainstream media, especially in terms of entertainment.
I think the CNN blog.
Yeah.
So exciting.
It's unfortunate even to expect them to.
Well, it's like the first time I ever saw an actual female orgasm in a porn movie was an ejaculation, and it was a close-up of this woman, like, coming her brains out and ejaculating, and I could see the muscles moving, and I could see the ejaculate coming out and everything, and I was like, holy shit, that's what that looks like. And after that, you get your taste
special
of it.
Special effect.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
You get your taste of it, and you're like, okay, the rest are pale imitations, or why are they not bothering? And then you kind of go, well, wait a minute, who is this porn being made for anyway, if it's not for straight men who want to see women having orgasms?
Yes.
Is it really all about the dick? I know tons of gay guys who love gangbangs and bukkake films, straight ones.
See, that it makes you wonder where it's coming from. Is it coming from the audience, or is it coming from this old boy network who, like, really aren't interested in it and don't want to see it? But yeah, I don't know what to think about squirting, but I've seen that.
You don't think about it. You just have to.
No. I don't know.
Think good thoughts.
I don't know. I'm slightly skeptical, but I have seen. I will say this: that the girls who do the squirting, there's a girl called Cytheria that's out there right now.
Yeah.
And my God, like, I don't know whether it's that the liquid is fake or real or what, but what is going on with that girl is 100% real. I mean, she's going
through
nuts.
She's
going absolutely nuts.
It's a really amazing phenomenon, and it's a phenomenon that has been poorly imitated in porn too, because it's funny, there are women who actually ejaculate in porn, and then there are there was a series like a Gonzo series that came out where the women fake ejaculated.
Maybe this is how the whole, like,
it was really funny because they'd go and then it looked like they just went and you're like, what?
Somebody's holding a hose under it.
Exactly. But
like they're pregnant and their water broke.
Yeah, and that's what it looked like. That's what it looked like. And I'm like, that is so fucking fake. You know, but then you see the women that actually do, and you can actually see it coming out of the urethra, like out of the urethral sponge.
Wow.
It's really amazing.
It is amazing.
I mean, it's like, and it's completely sexual physiology 101. Like, the only I grew up in the California school system. I got a little bit of sex ed. It was all illustrated genitals about reproduction. Like, you never see non-illustrated genitalia in any sort of a learning format. So we sadly end up learning about sex from porn. But that was my lesson, you know? It was just like, wow, okay, that's what it looks like. I can see where it's coming from. People who are saying the G-spot is, you know, in Albuquerque are fucking crazy because that's where it is. And and it's real. And there's been a lot of research into exactly what the ejaculate is, trying to figure out what it is, because there's been an argument for a while saying whether it's urine or a different type of fluid, and it's actually a different type of fluid with a little bit of urine in it. It's
prostatic.
Into
the laboratory.
A little bit of urine in there, but it's a clear, kind of slightly viscous fluid.
Yeah.
It's different than
urine. There's a fucking lot of it.
Yeah, I've seen, like,
it's
crazy.
I got a bottle full of it right here.
Maybe that whole bottle,
tasty. Anyway.
Gives you immortality, I think, right?
Absolutely. I think our audience is going to have to go and take care of their get, needs now.
Get a drink of water.
So yes. I'm afraid we're running out of time, but Violet Blue, tell people where to find your stuff.
Oh.
And I'm sure most of our listeners know about your podcast, but tell them about it.
Okay.
Those that don't know, let them know about it.
Okay. You can find me and everything that I do at a website called tinynibbles.com. My podcast is Open Source Sex, and if you type that into Google, you'll find it. Also, I write for Fleshbot.com, and I write for SFS.com and a variety of other outlets.
Great site. So, Fleshbot's great site.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of fun with it. Definitely. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks to Violet Blue for being cool. The music you heard was Stairway to Bootleg Heaven by DJ Earworm. Join us again next week when our guest will be Dondre Teeter from the Revolutionary Communist Party. And check it out. Our website at ruseriousradio.com now takes audio comments. So, if you've got something to say about what you've heard, and you have a microphone of some sort going into your computer, just go to the site and click on any button that says, Send Me an Audio. If you're clever or witty enough, we'll play it on a future show. The Are You Serious Show is part of the Mondo Globo Network. Check out all the shows at mondoglobo.net. Thanks for listening, and don't be afraid of the dark.